This is the Talk of Fame Network on SB Nation Radio from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Here's Clark Judge, Rick Goslin, and Ron Borges.
I want to welcome into our Talk of Fame Network studios today Mike Haynes, who along with Lester Hayes formed what many consider to be the greatest cornerback tandem in NFL history back in the Super Bowl days of the Los Angeles Raiders. Mike was a 9-time Pro Bowl selection, 8-time All-Pro selection, a member of the 1980s All-Decade team, the NFL's 75th anniversary team, and was elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1997. He's here with us today to discuss what became an instant hot topic after a group of 20 or so Hall of Famers led by Eric Dickerson issued a letter, some see as a demand, for a $300,000 annual pension or as well as health insurance, or they would boycott future Hall of Fame inductions, including next year's 100th anniversary. Mike was among the 20 or so names on that list, but I always know him as a voice of reason in a league sometimes devoid of it, so I wanted to give him a call and just see if we could sort this issue out. Welcome back, Mike.
Thank you, Ryan. That's always good to be talking with you, really.
I read all those accolades for you. I got tired just reading them all. It was unbelievable. It's stuff.
I had forgotten about some of them.
Yeah, there you go. The first thing about this letter that struck so many was that the Hall of Famers seemed to be asking for this only for themselves, even though the letter did at one point say they wanted it to be a sort of a template to eventually cover non-Hall of Famers. I know that bothered a lot of people. How did you see it, Mike, and how would you sort of explain what your intentions really are?
Well, you know, I think what Eric wanted to do was to highlight the Hall of Famers, but realizing that, you know, our quest is really to help all retired players, in particular the guys that played before 1993. We don't all the players don't have the same type of benefit package going forward, and I don't think the public knows that. We don't have health insurance. I don't think people know that as well. They're pretty surprised to find out that all the Hall of Famers aren't millionaires, you know. What I think people forget is, you know, the salaries have really skyrocketed over the years, and guys are living a long time. You know, I think maybe when, you know, there was a time when the average guy supposedly only lived to be like mid-50s. The guys are living a lot longer, and the guys who played when salaries were $20,000, or I can remember when I played with a guy named Bobby Howard at New England, who was a corner my rookie year. He was on the other side, and he told me his signing bonus was a new Pontiac GTO. You know, and so, you know, I think the GTOs in those days were going for like $3,500. Even a Mercedes-Benz was like $5,000 or $6,000. A beautiful home in Beverly Hills was probably $60,000. You know what I mean?
Right.
So everything has changed, and all the pensions were all based on the money that the guys were making. So if they didn't make a lot of money, you can imagine what their pensions were. They didn't have a cost of living increase or an inflationary kick into it. And so, you know, every year, the longer they live, the money goes down instead of going up. And so a lot of those kinds of issues that people aren't aware of. And I think a lot of the players, they don't like to talk about their financial issues. They have too much pride, and they get stuck. They get stuck in a place where it looks odd when they're talking about these kinds of things. But there's also guys who were played after the '90s who are doing great. But they're, you know, as a Hall of Famer, I think most people are unaware that until recently there haven't really been any Hall of Fame programs. And you know, the thing that you get is to say that you're a Hall of Famer, to have a jacket, a ring, have a bust in Canton, and, you know, if you don't need an agent, you know, a lot, you know, it doesn't make sense to have an agent, but maybe it does. And so a lot of guys in my era, we didn't have agents. So, so if we're going to make any extra money being Hall of Famers, it was going to have to come from programs that either we started ourselves or the Hall of Fame started. And the league continues to use those players, to promote those players, compare today's players to retired players. You know, last night I watched Drew Brees become the all-time, you know, passing leader. And he passed up two Hall of Fame, you know, One's a Hall of Famer, one's a future Hall of Famer for sure. But all of those guys, when you compare them, you know, back to the guys that played in my era, they had different kinds of careers, you know, monetarily. And there's nothing really that can happen. The league still uses their names to promote even these current players, uses their images in similar ways. And it's not a bad thing. It's, you know, I'm not saying that the league is taking advantage of the guys. I just think that the guys really have kind of woken up and realized, wow, you know, it'd be great. They're still continuing to use our images, our brands. Wouldn't it be nice if we could come up with some programs as well that the guys can use, the Hall of Fame can use to promote the game and to help communities, help some of our retired players as well, and pay these guys a stipend. So it's really, I just don't think that the story is out there. I don't think people really understand what's going on. And it looks like a bunch of rich guys asking for more money. And that's not the case at all.
Mike, there was some question whether that letter was ever intended to be released or, for that matter, even sent to the NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell, NFLPA leader Demoris Smith, and Hall of Fame President David Baker. How did it go public? And were you among those who later said they never agreed to either of the demands or even sending the letter?
Well, no, I'm not one of the guys that said any of that, but I was surprised that the letter became public. We had several phone calls with a lot of the guys that were mentioned in that letter every weekend for a couple of weeks, and we talked about what was going to be in the letter, but I didn't get a chance to see the letter before it went out, and I was shocked that it was public. You know, I really thought this was going to be something that was going to be handled quietly and talked about with the commissioner and Demoris Smith at the Players Association, and that we'd be able to, you know, have a nice friendly conversation about it, but that didn't happen. But I'm actually, in some ways, I'm glad that it turned out the way it did, because, you know, now I'm talking to you guys about it and we're educating fans about it, and hopefully, you know, people will understand what the challenges are.
Well, Mike, you know, the NFL, when it comes to money, nothing stays quiet with those owners.
Yeah, I know.
They start yelling and screaming. You know, one of the problems that I don't know if problems is even the right word, but one of the things that bothered me about it, and I've talked to you about this right after it happened, is that some of the guys who signed it, including Eric, frankly, were either strikebreakers or members of a thing that was called the Quarterback Club that broke the back of the union's effort to win their federal court, their antitrust lawsuit during the 87 strike when the league appealed. And those jersey sales revenue was supposed to go to fund that the union's appeal or to fight the league's appeal. And then the league, being smart, signed a ton of the top 20 or so quarterbacks and a few other stars like Eric and I believe Lawrence Taylor as well. So in a way, it just seems to be contradictory to me that on the one hand, some of these guys are now saying they need these pensions and so forth or should be getting some compensation. Yet 30 years ago, when the fight was on, they jumped the fence. What do you sort of make of that? You've been involved in several of those strikes when you were a player.
Well, I know both those guys, and I know a lot of those guys that were on that Quarterback Club, and I know that they would never do anything that they felt was going to be bad for all players. So I know Eric, and I've gotten to know him better since our playing days. I know that he would never do anything to damage an opportunity for all players. Even this letter, we talked about it several times. And, you know, guys were saying, "Well, we don't want to look like the Hall of Famers are not part of it." And he would remind them, "Guys, this is about all players. We're just going to start with the Hall of Famers." So, I don't know what was going on back then, and we definitely know that there was no social media. There was no way for the conversations to, you know, get across the country in a short period of time. And, you know, that would be a good question to ask of Eric and Lawrence. But I just absolutely know that they would never, never do something that they felt was really selfish and going to be something that would be great for them and bad for all other players.
Mm-hmm. Mike, according to the league, if they agreed to the letter's demands, it would cost $40 million a year to pay the 100-plus living Hall of Famers such a salary and benefits. That comes in just about what Roger Goodell's salary is. Is that accidental math or a stroke of genius?
No, I don't think there's any thought that was given to that.
I think there was.
Yeah.
Well, if you hired me, I would have thought of it. I thought that was the greatest thing going, you know. The union had long ago took the position that it doesn't represent former players, although it did negotiate some small pension increases, including a fund for the pre-93 players who have laughably small pensions and few other benefits, in my opinion. So where do you see the Hall of Famers leverage in all of this, since the union even comes out and basically says, we don't represent you guys?
Well, I think it's, basically it opens the door for a conversation, I think. And so we're at least talking about it. I know that Eric has talked to the commissioner. I'm not sure if he has talked to Damaris Smith yet. Last time I had spoken with him, he had not talked to him. But we're at least having conversations about it. There's a couple of Hall of Famers that are working at the NFL office, and they are having conversations with the commissioner and owners about some of the things that they know players are struggling with or need help with. And they seem to be pretty optimistic that we're going to be able to work something out. So I just think that sometimes you have to make some noise and let people know that things aren't going the way you'd like or the way you thought, or the way they could. And maybe that's what's happening now. Instead of having owners saying, "Man, this is great. The game is taking off. We're talking about building stadiums and having football around the world." And then they're not taking time to look back at the guys who started or who had been associated with the game the longest and reaching back and trying to help those guys. And I can understand that. Sometimes I get tunnel vision. So my wife has to pull me back and tell me something to get me back on track. So I get it. And I'm just hoping that people get the right idea of what's going on here and support what's happening.
Mike, there's another group of former players that includes Ken Houston, John Riggins, Joe DeLamalier, and Elvin Bethea, who have created a group called Fairness for Athletes in Retirement. They're seeking a pension parity for all former players, including roughly 4,000 pre-1993 players who qualify for pensions. Where does your group stand with them?
We've had several conversations with them. Joe has been on several of our conversations, and so have some of the other guys. As I said, we start off with the idea we're going to help the Hall of Famers, but the whole idea is to help all the retired players. And I think having conversations with those guys helped me to see that we are going to have to find a way to talk to all players, because we don't want the guys, the retired players, to think that the Hall of Famers are doing things without taking them into consideration, because we are, and we see it all as one and working together as one. I think that it's been my thoughts all along that the Hall of Famers, if there is a pension, that the Hall of Famers should make more than the general player. And I used to use corporate America or the military as a way of doing it. It's like, some people think because I played 10 years and they played 10 years, we should get the same. And I just don't agree with that. I feel like the guys who played most of the downs or who were the starters, they should make more than the guys who were on the team if I got hurt.
Well, Mike, we're just about out of time. I appreciate your coming here and also tackling what's a pretty sad issue. I mean, it's a $14 billion business, and you've got some of those, especially the pre-1993 players that are struggling to pay their mortgage or to find somebody to give them health insurance. So thanks for enlightening us on the whole issue. Good luck on it. And hopefully if you can squeeze a few bucks out of the commissioner, we'll have you back on and we can do a victory lap.
That'd be great. I would love to see you run a lap, Ron.
Yeah, well, I'd be walking a lap. You got that right. Thanks, okay. Mike.
All right. Okay, guys.
That was Hall of Famer Mike Haynes. The Talk of Fame Network. We'll be back after this timeout.